Good morning. It is 7:44. You're on the Mighty 690. Time for our Green Side Up program. We have Kenny Dotson from K-State Extension here in studio with us, horticulture agent. Good morning, Kenny. How's it going?
Good morning. I'm good.
Hey,
how are you doing?
Doing well. Good to see you here. And I know that it is definitely into the thick of things with the gardening season.
Oh, yeah. It's gardening season for sure. And also, not to mention, we're finally seeing some heat again, which I have my own qualms about, but that really means gardening season's kicking off. We're seeing things grow properly. We don't have to worry about, you know, those 40-degree dips, those negative below 40-degree dips, or if you're in western Kansas, you know, freezing concerns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So what did you want to talk about here today?
So I've got a couple different caterpillars to talk about. I've got a couple different pests that we see as problems that we want to control. And I can also loop it back into some good caterpillars, namely monarchs or other beneficial butterflies. But first, I want to talk about the things we're worried about. So things like the hornworms that everyone's worried for as you're planting our tomatoes. And then we're also going to talk about bagworms, because bagworms we won't see for a minute, but they will be a problem. And then I've also got the imported cabbage worm, which personally is something I've seen in my garden, and I'm not happy about it.
No, no, no. So obviously, you know, How do we figure out, you know, which one is what? I mean, do you have to kind of catch them in the act, or do they leave, you know, telltale signs of, you know, damage to plants?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, like most caterpillars, they're going to be a feeding pest, at least in that stage of their life. Obviously, they're not the mobile stage of their life. Caterpillars turn into butterflies or moths, and so those will eventually be mobile. But for right now, they're on your plants, they're moving around, they're pretty visible sometimes, but they can start off really small. The biggest telltale sign for any caterpillar damage or pest presence is going to be actual leaf tissue missing, sometimes in a pattern, sometimes just in sporadic sections, because they're pretty hungry sometimes, hence the hungry, hungry caterpillar, mm-hmm. of course. And that's mostly going to be that feeding damage. However, there are some other signs of the pest around, like the hornworms will always leave little poops. Cabbage worms can also leave little poops. I say little because they're pretty small animals. But the hornworms are pretty particular in that their frass, as we call it, the excrement they leave after eating your delicate plant tissue, is going to be kind of geometric in shape. It's small little balls of green frass that eventually clump up into sort of geometric shapes. Not quite like a cube, but pretty defined edges.
So, for instance, I've got right now some lettuce that's growing, but, you know, there's not a lot of damage, but I do notice, like, maybe a couple leaves have just little holes just randomly out of the lettuce. So is that something that might be one of those caterpillars that's causing that? I mean, it's not like really terrible, but I do notice it.
Mm-hmm. So there are other types of bugs that eat as well. The first thing is to see the damage first and then realize, okay, it's probably a bug because it's chewing up. There's no like discoloration or other weird symptoms like a fungus or anything else going on. If you can see the actual chewing holes and you're pretty sure they're chewing holes, then a good thing to know is that it's an insect pest. I will say, personally from my experience, a bunch of teeny tiny little holes scattered around typically tends to be flea beetle. Flea beetle's pretty active. It's a teeny, teeny, tiny little small black beetle that does do a whole bunch of tiny holes. It's even smaller than all these caterpillars.
Sure. In this case, they're more like kind of a little, maybe pea-sized hole, mm-hmm. maybe even a little smaller than a pea-sized hole, but each leaf might have one or two little holes.
Mm-hmm. And then your second thing to do would be actually looking at the plant a little closer, if you can, or if they're present, because sometimes they're not as active as you are at certain times of the day. So for like my cabbage worm I saw on my cabbage, I said, oh, I'm seeing like a lot of eating damage. Oh, I'm seeing some weird dead jelly-like wormy thing. I wonder why that is. Thankfully, I didn't have to treat it for that one because it was already dead when I got to it. But there are a couple different treatment options, some that are pretty good, some that I recommend for almost every caterpillar pest, just because those are the ones we always see treating caterpillar pests. But the thing I always want to mention when I mention chemical control, insecticides, integrated pest management is there's a lot of different ways to treat for pests, and sometimes there's a lot of different times and methods to treat at certain parts of the season and certain parts of the life cycle. So it's important to know the life cycle of the pest you're dealing with, or just a general idea of it, because if you're trying to treat something, you know, at the wrong time of its life, it's not going to work very well. or if you're trying to treat something, you know, on this plant right here in front of you, and it's maybe already in the flying stage of its life, it's not nearby at all. It's going to be way too far away, or it's not going to, you know, sit on there enough to really get the treatment.
So is there treatment that will kind of cover a lot of these different caterpillars, or do you really have to ID that caterpillar before you treat?
So the good news is, for caterpillars at least, there's a couple different ones that are pretty great for caterpillar killing, destruction. And there are also several, like all the orthos contain a class of pyrethroids, which is a chemical derived, mostly it's synthetic now, but the original one was derived from chrysanthemums. So it's a natural insecticide, even though almost everything you see on a bottle now is going to be synthetic insecticide. So there's the bacteria-based ones. There's a spinosad, which is based on a bacteria that ends in spinosa, hence it's called spinosad. And there's BT. So if you're a farmer, or if you know a farmer, or if you've heard of BT corn, BT stands for Bacillus thuringiensis. There's also a subspecies of that called Christachii, or Christachii, and that's like the insect pathogen, essentially. It's the soil bacterium. Gets a chemical in it that defends against bugs because it wants to survive too. And so it's kind of like doing a biological control, but we've refined that chemical and made it a chemical control. Those sprays will literally just say BT on the bottle a lot of times, or I tell people if I recommend a chemical name, just look on that little chart in the front. Usually it'll tell you the active ingredient. Usually it's not too strong. It's like the 1% and then, you know, the 99% inactive ingredients that they don't list. And so BT is going to be one of the best caterpillar sprays I recommend. But keep in mind, BT and spinosad are both stomach poisons. So you've got to try to coat the entire plant, make sure everything's covered. So by the time the caterpillar gets there and starts chewing, it gets the poison in its system. If you cover like part of the plant, or maybe you treat it too late, the caterpillar is already done eating or has eaten a lot and probably might not be as effective. Especially for things like bagworms, which is a great time to control them now, because right about now is when the moths are flying around. Only male moths, by the way. The sad news is the female moths do not survive. So the female moths actually overwinter as a bag. They never leave the bag. They never turn into a moth. And essentially, that bag holds hundreds of eggs because, you know, it's survival of the fittest.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta make as many babies as you can.
Yep.
Gotta cover up all those juniper trees. And then people wonder why they're all dead. It's pretty rough. But, so eventually right now, around spring-summer transition, is when all those babies inside the bag kind of balloon out. So you may have seen, like, videos of spiders, you know, spinning a line of silk and then getting carried away. That's the first thing I think of when I think of, like, silk ballooning. But these worms do that, too. And they're nearly microscopic. They're teeny tiny worms to start off with, which makes them incredibly hard to see. And most people don't even see them until winter or fall. A, when the damage is done, and B, when maybe it's already defoliated, or you can see the worms better and you're more concerned. But right now is the time to treat, because by the time they're big enough to sit as a bag on your tree, it's way too late to treat them. They're already kind of done eating.
Sure. Now, if we are treating for any of these, and we do have, say, you know, plants that we're planning to eat, is there a time frame that we want to wait until we actually, you know, eat some of these?
Yes. So last time I was on here, Wendy mentioned the label is the law, which is true. And also the label is kind of like the Bible of any chemical you're working with. The label will have everything you need to know. Usually it's like a re-entry interval or a harvest interval. It'll be listed on the back of your label. It'll tell you, you know, how many days from harvest you can plant it or you can spray it. And then it'll also tell you if it's restricted, which anything you can buy at the store is probably not restricted. They'll tell you how long you have to be away from it. If you do have a sprayer or somebody who's licensed to spray your entire tree for you, because sometimes people don't really have the access to spray an entire tree, they should know the chemical. They should know the reentry interval. It still might not even be a restricted use if they're spraying it. They just have the equipment. But if it is something that's you know, commercial grade, they would have the reentry interval. And it'd also be on the label of the chemical. So if they haven't told you, ask them what they sprayed and find the label online. Usually there's a website called Do My Own. They have a whole bunch of chemicals for sale, but also sometimes the labels and the safety data sheets. And you can also Google chemical name, label, safety data sheet. Pretty easy to find.
Very good. So anything to share here as we kind of wrap up this segment?
this segment, I just want to remind you to spray for your bugs early. Earlier is always better. And this is the same thing for everything from grubs to caterpillars as well. Right now is a great time to spray your trees for bagworms. Like I said, a BT spray or a spray containing spinosad. It's also a good time to start thinking about tomato hornworms if you've already haven't noticed them yet. Those are the green buggers that are hard to see because they're the same color as your tomato stem. They've got the lines on the side. They're pretty obvious and annoying, and it's best to treat them now and early before they start to regenerate. And of course, that imported cabbage worm, that's going to be a little bit of green, sometimes with a yellow line on the back, usually defoliates all your cabbage or broccoli, everything in that family. Keep an eye on those plants because they should be ready for harvest if they haven't already been harvested.
Better to do it now before the damage really gets started.
Absolutely. And keep in mind, I always try to recommend, you know, if you can detect them first, you know, try to treat them early, treat them subtly, as opposed to dousing everything with chemicals and spraying everything nearby. If you are treating a huge tree, if it's next to your pollinator garden, maybe don't spray really harsh chemicals on it, because those harsh chemicals can drift over to your pollinator garden. And caterpillars are caterpillars. Like I mentioned, these sprays target any caterpillars. They're great at destroying caterpillars, which means your pollinators as well, your monarchs as well.
Now, I know that, just wrapping up here, I know that, of course, a lot of things are just, you know, they may come in a spray bottle or you put them in a little, sprayer you pressurize, but there's still some of those dusts out there that you would kind of sprinkle on a plant. Mm-hmm. Is there an advantage to using maybe a dust versus a spray or vice versa?
Both work. The name of the game usually is coverage. So sometimes dust can work. Sometimes dust you can put in like a little puffer and like puff it around your plant. Typically for a spray, sprays tend to have a little bit better coverage, and also can be a price point for you. I know one of the big ones for the cabbage control is, or the caterpillar control is BT, which not sponsored, but Fertilome does have a bottle that literally says BT spray for caterpillars. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty obvious and well marketed. So as long as it says BT, spinosad, there's also all those pyrethroids, those synthetic ones that are a lot harsher. Those are like the nuclear option. And that's why when I say, you know, be careful, because you don't want to spray something that kills every bee in a mile radius, which is going to be those pyrethroids. They all end in thrin usually,
okay.
But they're also like everything in the stores, like all of our ortho home defense raids usually have some kind of pyrethrin, permethrin, bifenthrin, cyhalothrin. Those are all pyrethroids.
Very good. And I know, of course, our local farm store is happy to help you out. But if you have more questions, I know, Kenny, you're more than happy to answer any questions.
Of course. I love seeing random bugs.
Yes, yes. He's happy to help. So if folks do have, do want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that?
You can get a hold of me at 620-670-5018. Or my new office will be stationed in our new Independence building, which today is the open house for. That's 712 West Myrtle.
Fantastic. Well, that's going to be great. We have more coming up as our green setup program continues. You're on the Mighty 690. Good morning. It is 8:11 here on the Mighty 690, and we continue along here with our Green Side Up program, and that is brought to you by Green Acres right here in Coffeyville. And joining us in studio, we have horticulture agent Kenny Dodson, and we also have a David Rowling here as well. So good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so David joins us here in this segment, and I know we wanted to talk about a big, exciting day coming up for the Extension District, Wildcat Extension Office here in Independence. You're unveiling your new office. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, tonight we are having an open house for our new office in Independence. For those that aren't familiar with where it's at yet, the address is 712 West Myrtle Street. If folks know where the old hospital is in Independence, it's right across the street from that, where the helicopter pad was. For the hospital, our office is now right next to that helicopter pad. It's no longer a helicopter pad. But we'll be having an open house from 4 to 5 this evening, and everyone is welcome to stop by, check out our new office, visit with all of the agents. We're excited to have this new office and start hosting events in it.
So how is this new office space gonna help you guys? You know, is there anything new, any new features that you're excited about?
One of the main differences compared to our old office location in Independence is this new office space has a really nice size kitchen that I think our fax agents are really excited about, because it will have more space to hold different cooking classes, canning workshops. I believe Kenny and Catherine, you're holding plant to plate there this summer.
Yes, we are, the first week of June. So the intent was to make a teaching kitchen. It's pretty big sized. It's got two stovetops, two ovens. It's also got a lot of freezer space for any storage if we do make big batches. It's not quite commercial grade as what was initially planned, but it is still very large. There's a nice large pass-through window for our meeting room, our conference room. So not only will that conference room be available for rent or access to 4-H'ers or any community members who want to rent it out, the kitchen also comes with that too, depending on your event.
Fantastic. So what is, do you know the plan for the old office space?
It is still controlled by the NRCS district.
Sure.
So we actually had no control over it, really.
Okay.
We just rented it from them.
Ah, gotcha.
What they're going to do with it, we don't know. We were speculating daycare because, mm-hmm. A lot of them have kids and it's a nice big open space.
Sure.
Beyond that, I'm sure any business who wants to hit up the NRCS office can ask. Yeah.
So just a quick note. So the USDA, we were in there with FSA and NRCS offices, and they were the building managers. So that building's actually privately owned. Mm-hmm. So it will be up to those landlords to decide what to do with it. And there might be a few restrictions, because it's mainly a USDA building, on the type of business or organization that can lease that office space.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And keep in mind, it is a federal, it's a government building, at least owned. And so when we were there with them, we are not federally funded, but not federally operated. So during their shutdowns and all the federal things that happened with them, it's something to keep in mind when you're sharing
sure.
that space.
Sure, but it could be right fit for depending on who it might be.
Yeah,
but
it's a very convenient location, mm-hmm. being next to Labette Health, across the road from Tractor Supply and Walmart.
Yeah, well, it's, again, very exciting to have that new building, and I know that should be a good fit for years to come. And Kenny, like you said, you're going to be actually officed out of there now.
Yes.
So that'll be very exciting. So as we continue along with our guests from K-State Extension, I know, Dave, and you wanted to talk a little bit about aquatic plants here today.
Yeah, it's going to be that time of year with the warmer temperatures that aquatic plants start to become a problem in ponds. And when they become a problem, mainly it's due to overabundance in a pond. We refer to them as aquatic weeds, or more commonly pond weeds. And I've already gotten a few calls about how to control different aquatic plants in a pond. So I just wanted to kind of give my yearly reminder that it's very important to have the pond weeds or aquatic plants that you're trying to control identified before implementing different control measures, especially when you're looking at using aquatic herbicides to control those plants, because just like weeds in your yard or pasture, different types of herbicides work best and are most effective on certain weeds. So unfortunately, the same is for pond weeds. There's not a one-size-fits-all herbicide. So if you are noticing some aquatic plants taking over your pond, and maybe they're going to get in the way of fishing later on this summer, and you want to get a head start on controlling those, you can give me a call at one of our offices. I am now based out of the Altamont office, but you can call any office and they can put you in contact with me, and I can come out and ID those plants for you and walk through your different control options. Or you can also take a picture of the plant and send it to me, and I can ID it that way as well. Because the control option that's usually the most popular is applying aquatic herbicides to kill off those pond weeds, but there's also other control options that you can implement, especially if you catch the aquatic plant growth in time. One option is using a pond rake. It's kind of like a larger style leaf rake, only it has razor blade style teeth between its prongs, and you can use that. It kind of like rakes the weed off the surface of the pond and also cuts it and brings it up on the bank. So if you know the aquatic plant has kind of gotten out of control and is across your whole pond, that might not be the best option because it's very labor intensive. But especially if you're just starting to notice some plant growth you want to get rid of, that would be a good option to consider. Algae is always a popular question I get about controlling and adding aquatic dyes to the water to limit the amount of sunlight that can penetrate the water surface, is another good option. And then it's also important to remember that, you know, pond weeds can be really frustrating. They can be a nuisance, especially if you're wanting to fish in your pond and your fishing line's getting tangled up in them. But aquatic plants are also an important part of the ecosystem of a pond and for fish and other wildlife that use that pond. So we never want to get rid of all the pond weeds. We just, you know, want to keep them in check.
Well, that is definitely a good reminder here. And I know that, you know, just like with the caterpillars and everything we're talking about, a little prevention here, maybe a little earlier in the season, is definitely going to go a long way.
Yes, definitely. If you can catch them early on, it definitely is a lot easier to control them, because as this summer goes on and we get warmer temperatures, they'll just continue to take off because they love sunlight and those hot temperatures.
Oh yeah, no, that is for sure. And you don't think about, like, you know, I think the lily pads are always kind of cool, but, you know, you never know if, you know, how many is too many, right?
Right, yeah. So lily pads, I've only gotten one homeowner and their lily pads had like really overtaken their pond. Most of the pond just looked like lily pads. So some plants like lily pads, they're really pretty to have on a pond. So those usually aren't ones I get questions about controlling, but any of the plants, when there gets to be an overabundance of them, they can become pretty frustrating.
Oh, sure. So, David, if folks do have questions on those maybe pond weeds, trying to figure out some of these aquatic plants, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
They can reach me at the Altamont office. That number is 620-784-5337, or they can email me at adaven@ksu.edu.
Now, any other events that are coming up that you want to discuss here as we get closer to summer?
Yes, I actually have a small ruminant, so sheep and goat, parasite control or parasite management webinar coming up next Thursday. It's going to be at noon. Dr. Bentley, our extension specialist for sheep and goats, will be the guest speaker joining me. If folks would like to register for that workshop, they can give me a call. Again, my number is 620-784-5337. And we can get them signed up for that workshop. We will need an email address to email you the link to the webinar. But if you're not able to make it, you can still register. And I'm going to record the webinar. So if you can't make it, I can send you the recording.
Fantastic.
And then James has a Spring Crops Field Day, or it's hosted by the Southeast Research Extension Center. But James will be helping out with it. That's on Tuesday, May 19th. You can call that same number, Altamont office, or call James or email James to help get registered for that event. Also, it's on our Facebook and our, what's it called, website as well.
That's right.
And then I've got a coming up in May 27th, 8th, and 9th. in Pittsburgh is our first plant to plate camp. That's where you get to, you know, learn about planting plants and then take a plant home and then also learn how to cook with vegetables. So it's going to be a kids camp aimed for third grade or so, third to sixth grade. 27th, 8th, 9th is Pittsburgh. June, I believe, 2nd, 3rd, 4th is Independence. And then June 9th, 10th, and 11th, we have transitioned the Altamont camp into a Pittsburgh camp based on our wait list and our numbers. So if you've already signed up for the Altamont camp, June 9th, 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th, please call the office and make sure you're still on. It should be in Pittsburgh now if you can make it. And if you're in Pittsburgh or somewhere closer to Pittsburgh, that camp is now closer to you.
Okay, very good. And then again, if folks want to stop by that open house in Independence today, remind us the time on that.
It is 4 to 5 this evening at 712 West Myrtle.
Okay, be a great time. So hope folks can stop by and check out that new office there. So again, we appreciate both of you coming on by and look forward to chatting again soon.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Thanks so much. That is our Green Side Up program brought to you by Green Acres here in Coffeyville. Straight ahead, we are going to have open line here in just a few minutes on the Mighty 690.